This is the Dive Into Malaysia Travel Podcast, episode 19, with Dive Into Malaysia founder, Sharon Goulet. In today's episode, I'm discussing everything Sarawak. Sarawak is the biggest of the two Malaysian states located on the island of Borneo, or East Malaysia, as it's also known. Borneo is the third largest island in the world, if you don't count Australia, and home to a huge amount of biodiversity. There are three countries located on this island: Malaysia, Brunei, and Indonesia. And this podcast is focused on the state of Sarawak in Malaysia, which is on the northwestern part of Borneo. Sarawak is home to many amazing natural and cultural attractions. It's not as well known as the other Malaysian state in Borneo, Sabah, and can feel a little bit more complicated to visit, but that just makes it all the more rewarding when you get here, as it's got some truly awesome opportunities to enjoy the best parts of Borneo, which to me are the interesting indigenous culture and the incredible natural resources of this island. From longhouses to the rainforest to my personal favourite city in Malaysia, Kuching, this is a great place to visit. In this episode, I'm discussing why you should visit Sarawak, how to get there, and what to do once you're there. I want to give you an overview so you can realise how amazing Sarawak is and why it should be somewhere that you visit. When I'm recording this, I've just got back from Sarawak 2 days ago, so it's fresh in my mind and I really can't wait to share this destination with you. By the end of this episode, you'll be ready to book your trip to Sarawak.
Welcome to the Dive Into Malaysia Travel Podcast, the place to be when you're dreaming and planning all the awesome adventures you could have in Malaysia. Each week on the show, your host Sharon will take you from underwater adventures in one of Malaysia's marine parks to standing on top of the world in Merdeka 118 in KL to eating the best food you'll experience in your life at a hawker centre, to planning how to get from A to B and where to stay. It's all here.
So today we are talking about Sarawak. I love Sarawak and I think it's crazy underrated. It's really a destination in its own right and is quite different to Peninsula Malaysia or the other Borneo state of Sabah. But what it does have in common with those places is it's still an easy place to visit with good development, plenty of English spoken, and of course the amazing food that Malaysia is famous for. It's really a great mix of amazing things to do and see that you can't do anywhere else. So you'll feel like you've gone somewhere really exotic and remote, but it's also quite easy. Sarawak really deserves its own trip and isn't somewhere just to stop for a few days as part of a bigger Malaysia trip. Although with just a few days, you could enjoy a stop in Kuching or Mulu National Park, but it's so much better to think of it as a separate destination. But before we dive into everything Sarawak, remember you can find today's show notes at diveintomalaysia.com/episode19. This has the links to everything I talk about and further information to help you plan your trip, because there are a lot of resources on this site. If you have any questions or want to learn more about travelling in Malaysia, make sure you also join us in the Malaysia Travel Planning Facebook group. You can find this by simply typing malaysiaplanning.com into a browser and it will take you to the Facebook group. So, Sarawak, what do you need to know? In this episode, I'm covering an overview of Sarawak, why you should visit Sarawak, how to get there, how to get around, what to do once you're there, and how long you should visit. Like I said, Sarawak is a state of Malaysia on the northwestern part of Borneo. It's about 124,000 square kilometres and is the largest state in Malaysia. And in fact, it's nearly the same size as all of Peninsula Malaysia. In the last census, 2.45 million people live in this state and the population is quite diverse. There are over 50 different indigenous tribes, with the Iban group being the largest ethnic group in the state, and actually they make up about 29% of the people. Chinese background people are about 23.3%, with Malays about 22.9%. So it's quite a different ethnic mix than what you'll find in Peninsula Malaysia as well. Other indigenous groups make up the majority of the rest of the population. When it comes to religion, about half the people in Sarawak are Christian, which again is quite different to elsewhere in Malaysia. This is because many of the indigenous groups converted to Christianity. It has an equatorial or tropical climate, as it's very close to the equator, so it's hot and humid all year round, and it can definitely rain at any time. So don't think there's a time to go, it'll be all dry and nice. No, it's going to rain, okay? Especially because a lot of places you're likely to go in Sarawak are rainforests. Rainforests are called rainforests for a reason, and you're going to see rain. But it is most likely to rain during the northeast monsoon from November to February, and likely to be dry between May and September. I just went in August. Rain did not pose a problem at all. Now, the peak tourist time is July and August. Now, the northeast monsoon time can be a little trickier to do things, like anything that involves a boat on the water, but it's not necessarily a bad time to visit. For a lot of the things you want to do in Sarawak, it doesn't matter all that much. Now, people have lived in the Sarawak area for a long time. The earliest known human settlement was at the Nea Caves and dates back 40,000 years ago. Chinese ceramics have been found in Sarawak dating back to the 8th century, and the state came under the influence of the Bruneian Empire in the 16th century. A British explorer called James Brooke came to Sarawak in 1839, and him and his descendants governed here from 1841 to 1946. Although during World War II, the Japanese occupied Sarawak for 3 years. In 1946, it became a British Crown colony, and then in 1963, Sarawak was granted self-government and then became part of Malaysia later that year. Indonesia was not happy about this, and this led to the Indonesia-Malaysia confrontation, a three-year armed conflict along the Malaysian and Indonesian border in Borneo. This was also when a communist insurgency started here that lasted until 1990. Now, this is a super brief history and there is a lot more to it, but hopefully it helps give you somewhat an introduction to the state. So why visit Sarawak? Imagine, you're on a tiny plane that only sits 9 on your way to Barrio. You're about to spend a few days living in a longhouse, exploring the area by foot and talking with many of the local Kalabats known for their long ears. You've just come from exploring the amazing rainforests and caves in Mulu National Park, and you can't wait to visit the riverside city of Kuching next, where you'll be able to see orangutans. And that's just one part of your Sarawak adventure. Those were all things I just did in Sarawak, and it was just amazing. From walking through the pitch black cave in Nea, where a 40,000-year-old skull was found, swimming in a rainforest lagoon nowhere near a road connected to the rest of Malaysia, to the look on the local faces when I bought some traditional beaded necklaces from them in the remote Kelabit Highlands, I experienced so much. There's also bustling Kuching with its cat statues and the world-class Borneo Cultures Museum. Orangutans, proboscis monkeys, and I seem to do a long, amazing hike every day. And I haven't even mentioned the food yet. The real question is, why wouldn't you go to Sarawak? So now I've convinced you you should go, how to get there. First of all, the only way to get here from Peninsular Malaysia or Singapore is to fly. It takes around 2 hours depending on where you're flying from and to, and there are plenty of flights, with the majority leaving from Kuala Lumpur and arriving in Kuching, which is the capital of Sarawak, and they only take about 1.75 hours. And there's other options as well. The best news is that flights can be very affordable. Multiple budget airlines fly here as well as Malaysia Airlines. Skyscanner is a good place to go to find the best prices and then book with the airline direct. If you want to explore Sarawak well, you're probably going to be flying around once you get there too. Sarawak is big and there's not always good roads. Two of the most amazing places I'm going to talk about now, Mulu National Park and Barrio in the Kelabit Highlands, require flights. They either aren't connected by road or the road is awful and it won't save you any money anyway. Flights are great value, especially if you book ahead. Along the main coastal area where the bigger cities are, buses are easy. I also hired a car for some of that so I could stop at the national parks along the way, which can be a little bit trickier to get to and you kind of need your own car or a private taxi. I have links in the show notes at diveintomalaysia.com/episode19 to where you can book buses, look up flights and car hire. I'm also hoping in the next year or two that we will start having multi-day tours to Sarawak to make this easier, more accessible and more awesome for you to travel here easily and in a much better way. So if you're listening to this a while after I first published it in August 2023, take a look at the show notes at diveintomalaysia.com/episode19 to see if these are available now. So you've made it to Sarawak. What happens next? It's time to have some fun and some of the amazing experiences I've already alluded to. Before I dive into this, obviously I'm not going to talk about every single place you can visit in Sarawak. I'm going to concentrate on the main places you are likely and should go. The types of places you can fit into a 1 to 2 week itinerary and that I've just visited. There is lots more information on everything I talk about in the show notes. I just want to give you a taste of what you can experience and a starting point to planning in this podcast. So the capital of Sarawak is Kuching and it's home to about 570,000 people. I really can't say enough good things about Kuching. It's a great place to start or finish your Sarawak adventure. If you don't have very long, you'll probably just go there. In fact, I've actually been to Sarawak twice before my most recent trip and I only went to Kuching. And now I've seen so much more and had so many amazing experiences. I really wish I'd spent longer and gone elsewhere. But if you don't have long, Kuching is awesome. There is plenty to do there to keep you busy for up to a week with so many great day trip opportunities, which are linked to in the show notes. However, if you can, like I said, visit other places I'm going to talk about. Like pretty much everywhere in the world, if you just go to the capital of a place, it's just one way to experience it. And there are plenty more. Kuching actually means cat in Malay. And although that's not why the city has that name, The city has ran with it, and it's fun spotting cat statues and buying cat souvenirs. Kuching is probably my favourite city in Malaysia. It's just so crazy charming. It's located on the pretty Sarawak River. Really try to stay in a hotel where you can have views of this, like the waterfront where I just stayed, and I paid extra to make sure I got a view, and it was really just amazing. And it never really gets old walking along the riverfront area. The area around it, especially Chinatown, is also very picturesque. It's got lots of low-level heritage shopfronts and temples. And I really just love walking around and soaking in the vibe. You could spend a half a day wandering around here, taking photos, visiting museums and more. A short taxi ride away is the Cat Museum, which is hilarious. It's more like a big cat collection that's really cheesy and corny, and it's just funny. You only need half an hour to see it and it will put a smile on your face. With another half day, definitely go visit the Borneo Cultures Museum, which is a new world-class museum and just amazing, by far the best museum I've been to in Malaysia. You can learn about the different cultures that make up Sarawak, its history, and more about its natural environment. It's a really great introduction to visiting this area. But part of why I love Kuching isn't just the city itself, as amazing as it is, but it's all the attractions around the city. It's very quick and easy to get into nature and experience all those reasons why you come to Sarawak in the first place. You can visit the Seminggo Wildlife Centre to see semi-wild orangutans. You can hike in Barco National Park to spot proboscis monkeys and other wildlife, or go on an amazing wildlife cruise at sunset. You can also day trip to see the world's largest flower, the Rafflesia. I've no doubt said that completely wrong. Or you can go visit a longhouse and learn about Indigenous culture. I have a link in the show notes to a list of day trip ideas. The second place you are likely to head, and I highly recommend, is Miri. Now, this city is close to the Brunei border, and it's not so much for Miri itself that I'm recommending it, although it's a nice enough city, but for all the amazing attractions nearby. It's a great jumping off point to my favourite places in Malaysia, and I not only stayed here, but flew through the airport here a few times on my most recent trip. The top place you'll want to consider is Mulu National Park. You have to fly here, and there are flights from Kuching, Miri, and Kota Kinabalu in Sabah. I flew from Kuching to here and then I went to Miri afterwards to avoid backtracking. Muli National Park, also referred to as Gunung Mulu National Park, Muli Caves National Park, Muli World Heritage Area. Basically, if it has the word Mulu, you're talking about this place. Now, it's one of the top places to visit in Sarawak, and for good reason. There are caves that are millions of years old, the rainforest is 60 million years old, and there's unique flora and fauna to discover here. There are many national parks in Borneo, but this is really not a typical national park. For a start, it's not connected by road to the rest of Malaysia, which is why you have to fly here. It has two mountains, including Mulu Mountain, which is 2,376 metres high, and you can take a really hard climb to the top if you so desire. The primary rainforest, geological formations like nowhere else, and absolutely massive caves. It's UNESCO World Heritage listed for a reason, and actually it met all four criteria to be listed when it only needed to meet one. It's home to many trails and tracking opportunities, from the tricky three-day track to see the Pinnacles, which is a collection of 50-metre-high jagged limestone spears, to the nice and easy botanical heritage trail near park headquarters. It's also home to famous caves, including four show caves that anyone can visit on guided tours. These caves are amazing and accessible to anyone able-bodied. I saw plenty of kids doing the tours here, including young kids. There are also adventure caving possibilities for people with caving experience who are wanting to gain caving experience and want something a little bit more adventurous. There's plenty of adventurous activities here. There's so much more as well. And what makes it great is what great condition the paths are in, how well everything is run here. It's in great accommodation as well. It really makes it really great for people who are like me and like doing some hiking and getting into nature. I wouldn't describe myself as totally adventurous or super fit. It's people who want like hiking light and natural experiences that are as great as possible without putting in tons of effort. Okay, you can do that there. Conversely, there are really tough tracks and there's caves for all levels. So whatever your sort of adventure and fitness and caving level, there's stuff here for you. And I really loved it. A full guide to visiting here is linked to in the show notes. So definitely go read that if you're at all considering going here, because it will give you all the nitty gritty. Also out of Miri, you can fly to Barrio in the Kelabit Highlands. I feel like this is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of place. It's just so amazing. It's actually only 180 kilometres inland from Miri as the crow flies, but it's a world away, especially as you basically have to fly in here or go on a bumpy 12-plus-hour trip, assuming you can find someone to drive you. All the locals I met had stories about taking that car trip, and it sounded quite awful, so definitely look at flights. The Kelabit Highlands is a beautiful and remote mountainous region that is perfect destination if you're seeking adventure and a unique cultural experience. You can find pristine rainforests, rolling hills, and towering peaks. However, I think the people are the main reason to visit. It's home to a vibrant Indigenous culture with its residents known for their warm hospitality and rich cultural heritage. The area is known as the land of 100 handshakes thanks to the hospitality of its people, and everyone was just so friendly and nice to me. The people are also known for their long ears, as traditionally they wore really heavy earrings which stretched their lobes very long. This is dying out though, as young generations do not do this. You can still see it currently in the older generation. It's easy to immerse yourself in the local way of life by staying with the Kelabit family in a traditional longhouse, so you can learn about traditional customs and crafts and participate in traditional ceremonies. Although to me, the better part was just seeing like how they lived and what was happening today, and you could just soak that up by staying in a longhouse. This region is also famous for its cuisine, which features a variety of dishes made from local ingredients. In fact, Barrio rice is famous in Malaysia, as are the pineapples and salt from here. And there is plenty more to eat in their rainforest supermarket, as one guide described it to me. For a very affordable price, you can easily stay in a local home, eat all your meals with a local family that will cook delicious local cuisine for you, and have guides take you around everywhere. You can learn how to do things like traditional cooking, dancing, or bead making, and so much more. I've never felt so immersed in Malaysia as I did here. I stayed in the biggest longhouse in the area. I watched people cook over fires. I ate at a table where I could see along the longhouse common living area. I walked around the area meeting locals and watching rice planting, and so much more. And all of this I did in just a few days. What's also very unique here when it comes to cultural interaction is that a lot of the older people speak at least some English, which removes a barrier for being able to get close to the culture. Australian missionaries actually came to the area in the 1960s and converted the population and opened schools where the language of instruction was in English. It helps you have so many more insights into a local culture when you can communicate so easily with so much of its population. I had one-on-one guides from the area most of the time in Barrio who spoke perfect English, and my host and her friend spoke some English. It was fabulous. Needless to say, the whole thing was amazing, so go if you can. Book ahead though, as there's only 3 flights a day that land there, with only 9 people per flight. So that's only 27 people a day that can fly in or out, and mostly that is local people that need to go do things. The flights were surprisingly cheap, actually, and I think I only paid about 90 ringgit each way. And it was quite an experience in themselves on such a small plane. I could see the pilot, there was no flight attendants, and the plane was low enough that I had gorgeous scenery to watch, including flying over Mulu National Park. And I loved every moment. I can't remember the last time I sat at a window just staring out the whole time, but I totally did on those flights. Now, as with everything I discussed here, there is more information in the show notes at diveintomalaysia.com/episode19. So back to Miri. You don't have to fly out of Miri to find cool things here. The city itself has an interesting petroleum museum and a few low-key attractions, but definitely the best parts are the nearby national parks. There is Lambie Hills National Park, which is about a 40-minute drive from the centre. It has a great short trail to an amazing waterfall. We can swim in a rainforest, and definitely after this trip, swimming in a rainforest in the lagoons is really one of my favourite things to do in the world. It's really just glorious. There's also the more famous Nea National Park. I mentioned Nea earlier, as it's home to the earliest known human settlement. In fact, not only did humans live here over 40,000 years ago, it's believed that people have lived here almost continuously until the 19th century. A human skull was found here that dates back over 40,000 years, and it's the oldest remains found in Southeast Asia. It's also a pretty national park with 3 caves you can visit solo. It's easy to hike around here, and it's nice just tracking. But of course, you'll also want to go into the caves too. The part where the skull was found is completely pitch black, and honestly, I found it quite terrifying to walk through here. I was alone, and I really don't recommend you go alone. You don't necessarily need a guide, but walk with someone else. Or maybe if I was to do it again, I should just do it until other people came along and then kind of stalked them and followed them along, because I found it a bit scary. I kept seeing huge black spiders in my torch, like cockroaches, grasshoppers. And the torch attracted lots of bugs too, so these things were flying around it. So I couldn't wear it on my head because they were all going in my face. Yeah, and it was a bit of mind over matter for me walking through that cave. But if you're not as wimpy as me, you'd probably find it fine. There's also ancient paintings in one of the caves and much more, and it's a must visit if you can spare some time in Miri. Otherwise, cities aren't so much the places you go in Sarawak. I went to Bintulu and Sibu on my recent trip as well, which rounds off the 4 biggest places to visit. The main thing I loved in these cities was the night markets, which were absolutely delicious, and it was super local. I mean, that's what was cool walking around these places. I didn't see anyone else that wasn't Asian. So I felt like I got a really local experience. Cebu is also home to the largest market in Malaysia during the day, and this also had some great food that was really cheap and easy to access, and I really didn't go hungry in Malaysia. In fact, I ate far more on this trip than I have eaten on any trip before, and it was really awesome. Otherwise, the other main thing to do here is to visit more remote longhouses like I did in the Kelabit Highlands. Although nowhere is as accessible as that if you want to go to a more remote one, because even though it's kind of tricky to get on a flight to the Kelabit Highlands, you can do that. So for other ones, you're going to have to do more overland travel, which means that you spend more time getting to and from them, which is tricky if you're short on time. So there's a couple of other regions where this is popular, like up the Rajang River from Cebu and around Batang Ai National Park, which is closer to Kuching. To just see a longhouse is not that hard. I was surprised to see them just driving down the main Borneo highway. It was really quite cool because I just think of longhouses as this exotic thing. More modern, easy to reach ones are all over the place. But it's worth trying to fit somewhere more remote where you can have a more local and authentic experience if you can afford the time. So how long should you stay in Sarawak? Well, as long as you have, a couple of weeks would be ideal. You can visit the main places I've talked about today with that much time without a problem. With just a week, I'd stick with the Kuching area and Mulu National Park. With just a few days, either just Kuching, or if you're coming from Kota Kinabalu already and can hop on the direct flight, you could go directly to Mulu Caves instead. So that's it. That's everything Sarawak to get you started. It really is just a fabulous part of the world, and I really, really enjoyed it. It makes me a little sad, actually, that it took me so long to get here. It was the last part of Malaysia that I hadn't explored properly, and it shouldn't have been last. It should have been one of the first. Now, remember, if you have any questions, join us in the Facebook group that you can find at malaysiaplanning.com and ask away. I have so much information I can help you with and share with you right now, and I'm so keen to share it because I really enjoyed Sarawak. Also, check out our episode show notes to see if we're offering multi-day tours now and make sure you have as fabulous a time as what I did. To recap, today I gave you an overview of Sarawak. We discussed a brief history, why you should visit, how to get there, how to get around, and what to do once you're there. We also talked about how long to visit. Remember, you can find show notes for this episode at diveintomalaysia.com/episode19. Make sure you subscribe to this channel because next episode I'm talking all about food and eating in Malaysia. Perhaps my favourite topic of all, food is simply amazing. I have a local joining me to get the nitty-gritty on everything, so make sure you listen. I look forward to chatting with you then.
Thanks for listening to Dive Into Malaysia Travel. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast for more travel inspiration, planning advice, and fun about travelling in Malaysia. Don't forget to leave a review so we can continue to bring you the best content. See you next episode.